Today is March 11th, 2021. I'm your host, Jared Holt. Let's go. As crisis after crisis plagues social media companies, it seems more and more Americans are questioning the roles that tech giants like Facebook, Google, Microsoft, Twitter, and others are playing in our lives, and whether the federal government should take regulatory action against those companies. Over the course of the last decade, the line between our real lives and our digital lives has increasingly blurred. I would almost argue it barely exists anymore. The internet is now a part of our lives as much as anything else is, and the federal government has allowed it to reach that point by policing itself mostly on its own. The result was the creation of the internet as we know it today. I can use my phone to answer any passing thought or question that comes into my mind within a matter of seconds. I can catch up with the news as I wait for coffee. I can even summon music to play in my home simply by requesting it into the air. I can hitch a ride at a whim. I can transfer funds on the go. In addition to all those nifty features and conveniences, the internet has also given way to an era where there is more public discussion and information exchanged than any point in history before it. Anyone can be a publisher. Information is traded freely, and the globe has been connected in ways that were once unimaginable. But all that gain has not come without severe, even dire, consequences. Traditional sources of information, like local newspapers or television stations, have struggled to adapt, many dying, and that has made way for bad actors and predatory content creators. Sometimes our data has not always been as secure as it should be, upending people's sense of security and leaving them vulnerable. And the ways that social media platforms are designed, keeping us clicking, happy in our ideological bubbles, has undoubtedly contributed to broader trends of hyperpolarization in the country. All that's to say, the glitz and glam of the tech uprising is beginning to wear dull, and less people are finding themselves confident in these companies. Tech giants have become among the most profitable and powerful companies in the world. They've accomplished this by mining and selling our data to advertisers. It's almost impossible to overstate the influence that they've gained over global societies. Regulation of tech companies will be the challenge of a generation, and the byproducts of whatever regulation we decide to pursue as a country will follow us for years. Public support for regulating big tech companies is growing. According to a Pew Research Center survey conducted in 2020, about half of Americans, 47%, say major tech companies should be regulated by the government more than they are now. 39% say they should be regulated about the same, and 11% say they should be regulated even less. A majority of U.S. adults, 64%, say social media has mostly a negative effect on the way that things are going in the country, and around 7 in 10 say social media companies have too much influence and power in politics. The itch to regulate these companies is becoming bipartisan, albeit for different reasons. And tech companies know this. They've spent gobs of cash, I'm talking millions of dollars, trying to fight regulation, or at the very least shape the way that eventual regulation is crafted. Recent appointments by the Biden administration hint that regulation may be coming down the pike in some form or another in a way that seems actually viable for the first time. Some tech companies like Facebook, Google, Amazon, they've postured themselves recently as pro-regulations in hopes of softening their image in the eyes of policy wonks on Capitol Hill. Wired recently reported on what it dubbed the industry's most recent, quote, charm offensive. I'll read from that now. Each company has taken a distinct approach to convince DC decision makers that it's a force for good. Facebook has gone hard on the "we support regulation" angle. American Edge has emphasized the critical long-term national security consequences the United States faces if it relinquishes its technology leadership role, as one ad put it. Amazon's ads have highlighted its support for a $15 federal minimum wage and its own move in 2018 to implement that pay floor for its employees. Google, meanwhile, has played up what it describes as its support for black-owned businesses. It's not new for corporations, both within Silicon Valley and without, to call on Congress to take some kind of action. Mark Zuckerberg has for years been insisting he supports some sort of federal legislation. But this latest publicity push is notable as big tech faces real regulatory pressure for the first time. So to meet that moment, I'm about to be joined in conversation by Ari Cohn. He's an adjunct fellow at Tech Freedom, which is a nonprofit, nonpartisan tech think tank. It works on the premise that top-down regulation of technology companies is not effective in solving the different woes of the internet that people want to be fixed by regulation. There may be moments where we disagree here on that perspective. Regardless, I think he's an incredibly thoughtful voice on these issues, and I'm excited to have him joining the show right after the jump. Joining Shitpost now is Ari Cohn. What's up, dude? How's it going?
Doing great. How are you?
Oh, man. Stuck inside like everybody else. But we got to talk about tech regulation because we are in a moment of time where we are probably closer to seeing some sort of tech regulation passed than, you know, any of the years before it, maybe even in the history of the internet. Thanks for coming on the show, but I want to get your take on this moment that we're in. You know, tech regulation has become this increasingly growing drumbeat kind of in the background of politics. And I'm curious your perspective on, you know, why that drumbeat has continued to grow and what, you know, now that we have Biden in and Democratic control of Congress, you know, what could lay ahead of us?
I think this moment was destined to arrive at some point or another, regardless of what caused it. I think that the vast amount of information that we consume online every day led to this kind of being an inevitable flashpoint. I think in a large part, it has been kind of influenced by grievances on both sides of the political spectrum. And the fact of the matter is we're in kind of a weird situation where everyone seems to be thinking something must be done, which is never really a good sign. It's all for different reasons, but people just have kind of coalesced around tech being the enemy when really it's not. And it's hard to say where this is going to go with the Biden administration. The Biden administration is given signs that it wants to do something about tech regulation. It hasn't really kind of fully fleshed that out yet. But I think this year is inevitably the year of the reckoning when it comes to online regulation. It's kind of reached a flashpoint, particularly because of all the grievances over social media platforms banning certain people or removing certain content. And then on the other side, you have people saying they're not doing enough to remove harmful content. So it's kind of coming in from both sides and squeezing it into kind of the trash compactor from Star Wars.
Now, you said that a lot of these grievances, you know, kind of paint big tech as the enemy, but that you disagreed with that view. Can you expand more on that?
Well, it's difficult to necessarily pinpoint because it all really depends on what the particular grievance is at a particular moment that will influence why it's wrong. But, you know, the fact of the matter is I also think it's also kind of misframed. What people are talking about is not just going to affect quote unquote big tech, however you define that. And people will define that differently. It's going to affect everyone down to the smallest websites and down to the smallest online retailers and what have you. This is not something that you can just carve out big tech and just regulate that. the downstream influence or impact is going to be large. And it really needs to be thought out really well before people kind of just introduce knee-jerk legislation like we've seen.
You know, we're going to go through a few of the different proposals. I want to just, you know, start this part of the conversation with a disclaimer that because we're limited on time, there's nuances to each of these arguments that we're probably going to miss. We're going to, just for the constraint, have to talk about these in a very sort of general sense. But what I'm hoping is that by talking through some of this stuff, listeners can leave the episode and, you know, you all have a better understanding of the state of play. One that I hear a lot, and this is one of the arguments that I kind of hear coming from, you know, the conservative side of the aisle, the liberal side of the aisle, albeit for different reasons, which is rolling back Section 230 or modifying Section 230, which for those unfamiliar is often characterized as this part of the law that makes big tech platforms kind of immune for what anybody goes on and comments. If I were to go onto a Facebook status and say that I was going to do something illegal, for example, Facebook's not on the hook for that. You know, there's kind of been these arguments for reexamining that. How should we understand those arguments? Yes, there's arguments for and against, but you're a very outspoken critic of those arguments. So I'm curious your take.
So I think there's a couple of things that actually I would say about the description of Section 230. One of them being, it's not just the thing that makes big tech platforms possible or big tech platforms not liable for its users' content. This applies to every website. This is the law that has made the internet as we know it possible. And messing with that is a recipe for just untold effects that we can't even necessarily predict. I'd also say that the criminal example is maybe not as apt to this. You know, there's certain carve-outs for criminal activity in Section 230. But I think on the whole, you know, a fair summary is Section 230 in large part says that websites are not liable for the content that third parties provide, that it had no, you know, role in creating. And when you think about what Section 230 actually says, one thing that actually also gets lost is that it also protects users of websites. If I retweet something that you tweet and it ends up being defamatory, I can't be sued. They have to sue you. And, you know, when you think about the amount of data that is posted on the internet, not just Facebook or Twitter, but also independent websites that have forums, review sites, what have you.
It's nauseating. There's so much. YouTube puts out its stats every year, and it's something like just thousands and thousands of hours of video are uploaded every single day.
And that's kind of why Section 230 is so important, is because content moderation at scale is a near impossible task. It's not near impossible. I should correct myself. It is impossible. You cannot possibly go through that amount of data as it's posted and really analyze it in a way that would satisfy literally anybody. It's just a completely impossible task. And what Section 230 does is it allows different websites, different companies to develop different ways to moderate content without fear of liability because they are choosing to innovate and figure out how they want to do it. Section 230 allows platforms to be responsive and create policies that its customers want and its customers like. And is it always going to be perfect? No, it will never be perfect. And anyone who says otherwise is selling you something. It's always going to be a constantly evolving field with a constantly moving goalpost. And what Section 230 does is allows us to really just compensate for that as best we can. It allows companies to just figure it out and compete with each other.
So some of the misconceptions I see, you touched on it briefly just a second ago, is conservatives have that support this modification or repeal of Section 230, the argument I see often from them is that by making content moderation decisions, that tech platforms like Facebook are behaving as publishers and therefore don't deserve the same protections. The flip side of that, of course, is that some liberals have argued that modifying or repealing Section 230 would allow for more consequences to be dealt out whenever tech platforms fail to moderate things that they feel should be moderated against. Personally, I'm in the same boat as you. I think 230, modifying 230 is just kind of a disaster in waiting. But I'm curious, have you heard any arguments for modifying or repealing Section 230 that you found even like a little bit convincing?
Frankly, no, because all of them are so caught up in this partisan bickering from the left and from the right that they all just end up being complete disasters. But I want to go back to what you just mentioned, and that is the argument that websites are acting as publishers and therefore shouldn't be protected under Section 230. That is quite literally the opposite of what Section 230 says, and it is a pervasive bit of information that's pushed by people like Ted Cruz, who knows well that that's not what Section 230 is. Section 230 says that they are not the publisher for legal purposes of third-party conduct, or third-party content, I'm sorry. There is absolutely no distinction between publisher or platform in the law. The law chooses to treat websites as not the publisher of third-party content. That's it. It's really that simple. And there's this little nagging bit of complete disinformation that people keep whipping into some talking point that just doesn't make any sense to anybody who's actually read the law.
Yeah, so, there's also been these other avenues that different politicians have tried to take to get the government involved in content moderation, which on one hand, I completely sympathize with the argument. I personally find myself in the camp of, wondering whether these mega tech platforms have a responsibility to moderate things that they're failing to go through on. But the flip side of that is what's happening in Tennessee right now. State senators introduced legal efforts to try to prohibit social media companies from including political and religious speech limitations in user agreements, which I'm not sure existed. I'm not sure if that's a real thing or not.
It's not.
Another thing he wants to do is prohibit the removal of a political candidate's social media account and to ban government entities from urging social media platforms to regulate political speech, which is a bit ironic given that he is introducing this measure.
A nice bit
to compel certain moderation efforts. This kind of shoes in to what we were talking about before. I'm curious your thoughts on this, because it just seems like totally ass backwards to me.
I mean, ass backwards is a pretty diplomatic way of putting it in my book. But Tennessee is not alone. There's bills like this in Florida, Wyoming, Oklahoma, Utah, Texas, and other states too. And the thing that these legislators are getting wrong, well, there's two things. One being that Section 230 preempts state legislation that is inconsistent with it. So to the extent that any state legislature tries to say you will be held liable for something that Section 230 protects websites from being liable for, that law is invalid. The other thing they mess up is that they don't understand that even without Section 230, their law would be unconstitutional. What they are by and large trying to do is to force websites to carry expression against their will. The Supreme Court has already rejected the laws that said a newspaper had to carry a response from a candidate who was discussed in their coverage before. The fact of the matter is the government cannot compel websites to carry expression under the First Amendment that it doesn't want to. So, regardless of Section 230, their law fails constitutional scrutiny. And they just don't seem to realize that they can't say, pass a law that says you have to, carry this expression. It just doesn't work like that. And it's kind of a really depressing insight into the lack of basic civic knowledge that our elected officials have.
Yeah, and I think that that basic lack of like a civics education has also plagued the country more broadly. I can't help but think that if people like actually understood how government functions, that maybe change could be affected, more expeditiously. But, you know, I'm curious what to make of this sort of split. You know, there is a growing bipartisan consensus that something has to be done about big tech companies. Recent spikes in public support for more regulation against tech companies is due in large part to an increase in support from conservatives, which are, you know, theoretically the political party against regulation traditionally. But given that the goals here are so different, conservatives often arguing that social media companies should not have the power that they do to decide what's allowed and what's not allowed on their platform, and the liberal side arguing for access to more tools to punish social media companies for failing to moderate harmful material off their platform. You know, I'm just wondering what kind of Frankenstein monster that's going to look like if you try to slam something together through the door that's actually going to get votes from both sides.
I mean, this issue has been singularly effective in causing everybody on both sides of the aisle to abandon all the principles they once claimed to stand for. I've had people on the left saying, oh, we need to strengthen laws against misinformation and defamation. When you talk about opening up libel and slander laws, you start sounding a whole lot like Donald Trump. And then I have people on the right telling me that we need to rein in these big companies and regulate them more closely when they're the ones who spent decades fighting against government regulation of businesses. It's insane. It's just literally crazy town. The fact of the matter is that no bill is ever going to address everyone's concerns. What you're going to see is you're going to see each side proposing their own laws, which ignores the other side's concerns and just plays to their, you know, their base. And that's what a lot of this is. This is a lot of performative showboating, saying, well, I'm trying to do something. But let me tell you, very few good laws have ever come out of the attitude of something must be done. It's kind of like the old saying that dead children make bad laws. You know, it's always just going to be knee-jerk reactions trying to puff their chests out saying, I am doing something, even if it doesn't pass. You know, I tried. And, you know, it's an issue that's just attracted a whole bunch of unserious claptrap from people who are more concerned about showing what they tried to do than actually fixing any problems that they, you know, say exist. For instance, just the example of the fact of the matter is that conservatives should know that no matter what law they pass, Twitter and Facebook are going to have the right to remove whatever content they want. There is nothing they can do about it. So, you know, the thing that really aggravates me as a First Amendment lawyer is that what this comes down to, and they're saying, well, then they should be liable for everything posted on their site. That amounts to an argument that I don't like how this person or company is exercising their First Amendment rights, and I therefore want to exact some kind of punishment on them, which to me is just anathema to the entire, you know, just concept of First Amendment rights. It's completely and wholly unprincipled, just through and through.
But do you think that tech companies, especially the gargantuan ones like Facebook and Twitter, given the amount of space that they've occupied in the public discourse, I hate that word discourse, but the public discourse, do you think that they have a responsibility to moderate content in a way that's removing disinformation and inflammatory content, for example? This is a separate question from the regulation question, but do you think that's a responsibility that these platforms have?
I mean, on a personal level, yeah, I think that, you know, companies have some kind of social responsibility, particularly when they involve such, you know, great back and forth of public discourses. I repeat the word that you hate. Sure. Mm-hmm. On a personal level, I think that they do have some kind of responsibility to try and get it right. But the fact of the matter is that the law doesn't provide a remedy for every bad thing, and regulation doesn't fix every downfall and every shortcoming in moderating content. The fact of the matter is, again, it's an impossible task, and it's always going to be messed up. There is just no way that it's ever going to be 100% acceptable. So I think that consumers can push back and try and convince companies that they need to do a better job. But I don't think that's an area for the law to step in and try and force it. When has, you know, that kind of government heavy-handedness ever really worked out that well?
So a couple more different avenues. These are less, proposals and more on the wonkier side of things that are happening on the Hill right now. One is antitrust, which would treat these tech giants, you know, almost like monopolies. You know, if somebody came into your state and bought up every single power line, the government would want to regulate them or would want to pursue them in some form because they have effectively monopolized the market. And if you want electricity, you have to go to this company. So then this company is in a position to exploit consumers of a necessary good. There's a lot of legal minds and whatnot who are looking at tech companies through the same lens. You know, this to me seems like one of the more interesting avenues to think about. I do not know, and I haven't seen anybody lay out very clearly what the aftermath of antitrust measures going through would look like. Would we have like 10 different Googles? Would YouTube and Google have to separate again? That sort of thing. You know, I guess because the internet is still like an abstract thing, like it's easy to imagine power lines. You walk outside, you look up, they're right there. You know you have to be near one of those things if you want your lights to turn on. But the internet is this like more abstract thing that we're accessing through pieces of polished glass. and I guess it's harder for me to wrap my head around a monopoly existing there yet, even though real life and digital life really isn't that separate.
I think you're not the only one. It's difficult for most people. It's kind of a brave new world out there with things that are much more difficult to really conceptualize. I should preface this by saying I'm not an antitrust guy. My knowledge of antitrust law is relatively limited. But the things that, you know, stick out to me is, first of all, I don't know that antitrust is going to fix the issues, at least with regard to expression and whether or not content moderation is happening well or happening poorly and what have you. I don't think that antitrust fixes that. It really kind of is a different animal aimed towards a different thing, which is anti-competitive behavior. It's also a little bit silly, to me anyway, to claim that any of these companies have a monopoly. Because you're talking about companies. You're talking about a whole bunch of different companies that have competitors. Sure, there's Google, there's YouTube, there's Twitter and Facebook, and these things have different ownership interests in different internet companies. But there's also Gab. There's also Parler, which is trying to get back on its feet. There's all these different competitors. So it's hard to say that there's really a monopoly. Now, I think where a lot of the antitrust effort is maybe focusing is on the things like advertising and, search results and things like that, which, you know, I don't really know all that much about. But from what I've been told, the claims are relatively weak. But what I do know is that with respect to, you know, expression on these platforms, antitrust doesn't get you to where you want to go. So to the extent that people are trying to use that tool, I think a lot of it comes down to what I said before. It's that, okay, these people are unhappy about the way content moderation is happening, and they want to punish them, the companies. So they say, okay, well, let's go after them for some antitrust violation. You know, it's could be that maybe there's an antitrust violation. I don't know, but the motives stink.
Yeah, it seems to me the strongest antitrust argument would have to do around advertising, specifically things like Google AdSense. That takes me to kind of the final piece of these different proposals, and this one seems the most realistic to me, which is, you know, further regulation on the way that these websites collect our data and the amount of privacy that we can expect as consumers from that data collection. I think that is hugely important, especially as, you know, we've seen some of these smaller sites like Parler and Gab get breached, and we've also had some very major cyber attack incidents in recent months that have jeopardized a whole host of different companies, websites, communications. To me, regulating the collection of data, making a standardized process for it, and then also constructing safeguards for the way that data is used and stored makes the most immediate sense to me. I think that is something that you could actually get broader support on, because it's really not like the data collection and storage, I feel like, is a lot harder to politicize. It's like arguing like, oh, we should make sure the vault at the bank is safe. And then like, what is Ted Cruz going to do? Run up and be like, the damn libs are trying to lock you out of your money.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're right in that respect. I think data privacy is the place where you are likely to find a little bit more room to actually come together and find a solution. And I do think that there are some very real conversations about data privacy that we need to have. And I say this also, like, I'm not an antitrust guy. I am not an expert in data privacy, but I can easily conceive of, you know, a whole bunch of issues that we really do need to talk about. And, you know, you have movement in this area. You have the, you know, the announcement that Google was trying to ditch cookies and trying to move towards, you know, a more privacy-centric model. So, you know, I think that that is a place where there is room for movement. And, you know, I think that if, and this is just such a big if, unfortunately, if data privacy can be separated from the partisan hullabaloo over Section 230 and, you know, free speech and content moderation and all that, there may be progress to be made, but a lot of times those data privacy issues get shoved in with those other issues because it, quote unquote, is big tech related, and people think we're going to solve all these great societal issues all at once. And then you just end up getting nowhere because it's just so unwieldy and there's so much room for disagreement that, you know, nothing ever gets through. So, you know, I'm hoping that there may be enough will to separate out that issue so we can have those conversations that we do need to have.
Yeah, there's definitely conversations in this broader umbrella, I think, that are more important than others. I think like the data collection privacy is probably among the highest. But, well, I've been speaking with Ari Cohn on the future of tech regulation and all of these hills before us. It's been a pleasure, Ari, but before I let you go, I want to ask you one more question. It's the final question that every guest on the show gets. What's your favorite thing on the internet right now?
Well, as someone who is extremely deprived of live music and usually goes to dozens, if not hundreds, of concerts a year, I would say I've gotten through the last year because of Nugs.net, which provides me with recordings of concerts of a lot of my favorite bands. So that is really just pulling me through.
All right. Ari, where can people keep up with you and the work you're doing?
You can basically keep up with everything I'm up to in life on Twitter at Ari Cohn, A-R-I-C-O-H-N. And you can pretty much get a taste of everything there.
That was my interview with Ari. Go check out his work. He's an incredibly bright mind on this topic. And that's all we've got for this week on Shitpost. If you like what you hear and you want to sign up for the bi-weekly newsletter and help support the show, you can go to shtpost.substack.com to subscribe. This has been Jared Holt for Shitpost on March 11th. Take care.